Hey everyone, this is Andy, better known as Love Retro BTW on Twitter, X, Threads, IG, and Cafe BTW on TikTok and YouTube. A quick update that the Cafe BTW podcast is taking a very long hiatus, but I still have something really amazing to share with you. We have a fantastic retro gaming community on Twitter X, where we've crossed well over 2,000 passionate members. And if you're a lover of retro gaming, this is the perfect place to share your content, showcase your pickups, or just chat about your favorite old school games. To dive into nostalgia and become a part of the thriving community, click in the show notes on the Cafe BTW link tree or go right to my Twitter X profile on Love Retro BTW. And now, without further ado, gear up for another sensational episode of the Gamers Week Podcast.
This time on Gamers Week Podcast.
If I were single, I can't go into a bar with like my members only jacket, be like, hey, I just beat Tetris.
So? Just have to say, well, that means I have really fast fingers.
You know, you do have a point.
I can put long pieces in wells.
Fast fingers and a lot of focus. I don't quit till the job's done.
It's like, what are you? Is this a job interview?
Dates often are.
Not wrong. How was your guys' New Year?
I stayed up. I made it to New Year's.
Congratulations.
Thank you. I did it.
What did you do staying up?
Watched the ball drop on TV, sitting in bed.
So you're up only by a technicality.
Correct.
But you're still in bed.
And I didn't participate in World Hangover Day, so.
Neither did I.
Look at us. Blue?
I don't want to talk about it.
Uh-oh. Apparently you had a very good time.
Yeah, I'm a strong proponent of World Hangover Day.
Not only did I like the company, or did I only bought the company, I'm its number one customer.
Man, I remember being, you know, 19, 20, 21, and you wouldn't be caught dead going to sleep before like 4 a.m.
Oh, no.
Isn't that a Rugrats thing? I got responsibilities now.
Responsibilities. Are we ready to start this thing?
We are.
All right. Welcome to Gamers Week Podcast. Like the name says, we analyze the best, worst, and weirdest headlines of the past week in the video game industry.
Is this movie phone?
Yeah, I was just thinking the same thing. Yeah. Thank you for calling Movie Phone.
Why don't you just tell me the name of the movie you selected? This is episode 104, and today is Wednesday, January 3rd, 2024. My name is Donnie G. Retro, and I will be your host this evening. But as you can hear, I'm not alone. I have with me my two gracious co-hosts. My first co-host would rather see his bills lose early in the morning as opposed to seeing them lose during the late game.
I mean, you're not wrong.
Just so he can just get it out of the way and have the rest of the day to himself. You know him, you love him, Ryan Payne, aka Retro Game Brews. How are you doing, buddy?
I was better until a few seconds ago.
Just ripped that Band-Aid off, right? Yep.
Now he's just like in anticipation on what's to come on Sunday.
I hate you so much.
No, you don't. My second co-host is so dark that she thinks Castlevania is a sitcom. Ladies and gentlemen, by that evil laugh, you can hear my second co-host, Blue Williams, a.k.a. Writer's View. Blue, how are you this evening?
I mean, the anime, it's like half-hour episodes, isn't it? And those like crazy antics between the three main stars. How is that not a sitcom?
If it had a laugh track, that would be chef's kiss.
Yep, I'm telling you, it's a thing.
Whatever happened to predictability, whips and chains, and vampires?
Vampires on TV.
I like it. Let's run with it.
Do you guys know what day it is?
I think I do.
You think you do? Ryan?
Apparently not.
Like, I just said it. It's Wednesday, January 3rd, 2024. This is the 2-year anniversary of Gamers Week.
Oh my God! I didn't get you guys anything.
I am the gift.
So to celebrate, we'll be doing a live Twitch stream on Monday, January 8th at 6:30 p.m. Central Time. Sorry, at 6:30 p.m. Mountain Time.
Pacific Time. What?
Jesus! 6:30 p.m. Pacific Time, 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time, or ET. On twitch.tv/GamersWeekPodcast. Come join us for some laughs, some games, and some likely not safe for work content. And if you can't make it, be sure to check out the VOD.
I didn't know that ET was a ghost.
Kind of. I mean, there's a certain parts in the movie when he's like doing that, or like that, and that you hear a little bit of goat.
Oh my God, he's the chupacabra.
And now it's time to take a look at our reviews, reactions, and requests. At RealSobay310 says, thank you for keeping us informed and laughing throughout the year. Only podcast I never miss an episode of.
Aww.
Thank you.
Thank you.
At Kev Bayless says, congratulations Gamers Week on your fab 2023. Have a great new year and hopefully we will cyber meet again in 2024. Kev, I'm looking forward to that cyber meeting.
I was hoping to have like a real meeting maybe. Yeah.
And Kev, I want you to know that I Want a Video Game for Christmas song was in my head for 2 weeks straight this year.
And at Sheriff Snack says, liquid!
I think you could do it again, but I want to engage your core more. I want to hear more oomph in it.
More oomph?
Yeah.
Okay. Liquid!
Wow. I mean, admittedly, I was impressed by the first one. So,
No. That one's the take. That one is the take.
Damn. He's not going to be able to talk for the rest of the episode, but good on you.
Worth it.
Excuse me.
And just a heads up, if you don't want any spoilers from the game Final Fantasy VII, feel free to skip ahead about 2.5 minutes.
Oh my God. Really? Spoilers?
Spoilers.
If you still somehow don't know the plot twist to this 26-year-old game,
now's your time to skip ahead.
Right.
I'm very impressed, actually.
And now it's time for the
okay, everybody, calm down and welcome to our quarterly avalanche meeting. Here to decide who will represent us, the Council of Gamers, and deciding what questions and responses to ask for the Gamers Week very important poll. Now, before we get started, I see we have a new recruit. Please introduce yourself.
Yeah, thanks, Barrett. Hi, guys. I'm RGB, longtime lover of the planet, hater of Shinra, and I think I'd be a great choice to represent Avalanche at the Council.
But I'm Cloud, leader of Avalanche. Shouldn't I be the one?
Oh my God. Maybe. But I'd recommend everyone take a psych eval test before going, especially for multiple personalities and schizophrenia.
I think I should represent us. I do run my own business, after all.
Tifa, is it? Oh yeah, God. You run a dive bar that has children serving drinks. So, yeah.
Whoa, I'm the oldest here, so I should be the one. Oh!
Wait, aren't you like a teenager in your race? And do they even have seats for dogs at the council? Right now you're sitting on a massive dog bed that's on top of an Amazon box.
Meow, that's interspecies discrimination. Besides, I should go. I'm a fortune teller.
First off, no one likes you. And no one can pronounce your name. Hatesith, catchy. Oh, and be careful what you say around this guy. Loose lips sinks avalanche, if you catch my meaning.
You're just trying to steer this away from us.
Says the biggest thief here, Yuffie. I will bet all of my gil she has no less than 3 of our wallets in her back pocket right now.
Can we all just calm down? Now, I'd like to volunteer for the long haul.
Ooh, about that. And what does your name tag say? Eris? Aerith? I can't read it.
This is painful to watch.
And I bet you like that, Vincent, Captain Emo over here. All your questions to the council will be so depressing.
Who is your greatest lost love? Besides life, what is pain?
He's absolutely right.
And Sid has nothing to say. He's shit-faced at 9 in the morning.
RGB, you've been nothing but a disturbance. I think you should leave.
Hey, screw you guys. Kate Sith is a Shinra spy. Yuffie is going to steal your materia. Cloud is nuts. And Aerith is going to die. You bunch of losers!
What a jerk. Okay, back down to business. Wait, Kate Sith's a spy?
Meow. Meow.
I thought the voices were great.
Thank you. Hey, weren't we just talking about his voices?
Mm-hmm.
I think you're patronizing me, but I appreciate it. Thank you so much for your kindness.
Patronizing you at all.
Mm-mm. I thought it was great.
Thank you.
Well, every Monday on Twitter, we post our VIP, our very important poll. If you'd like to participate, follow us on Twitter at GamersWeekPC. Question for the week was, in honor of World Hangover Day on January 1st, what is your favorite genre of game when you're feeling under the weather? So coming in third place was Souls-likes for the masochist at 4.2%. Not many of you are masochists. Good on you. In second place was Cozy Games at 32.5%, and taking this in a landslide were RPGs at 50%, but 13.3% of you said other, so let's look at some of the comments from the poll. At Just While Project says, fighting games, they release my gaming adrenaline the best. At Thunderdome Gam 1 said, I'd have to go with beat-em-ups. It's either that or a Metroidvania. At F_F_Kane, platformers, Mario side-scrollers, unless that counts as cozy. Does not. At a Rad Mad Mall, racing games like the Burnout or Need for Speed series. And finally, at Frank Grande 3 said, a set-your-own-pace game like Tears of the Kingdom works for me when I'm sick. Yep. Just take your time, roast some koroks, and make them suffer like you're suffering. Nice.
Damn, Frank.
Right. So taking a look at this week's poll, Blue, what are you picking?
When I don't feel well or when I'm tired, I prefer a game where I don't have to think. And so, ironically enough, that means puzzle games, because I guess it's not that you don't have to, I don't have to think, but it's like I only have to use a certain part of my brain. And then hopefully the game is absorbing enough that I can just focus on that and ignore everything else, ignore how crappy I feel, and just kind of use it as a time waster, essentially. So puzzle games for me when I don't feel well.
Nice, because I was thinking that that's the part of my brain that hurts when I'm hungover. So kudos on you that it's a different sex. Donnie, what about you?
I was going to say, how smart are you where you're like, I'll play puzzle games when I'm sick because I don't have to think.
What? What do you do? I do differential calculus.
Exactly. And I'm over here like 3 + 2 = 7 times. I don't know.
He's in trouble when he runs out of fingers.
Yeah, exactly. Giggity. So I don't really have a particular genre that I feel like I can play whenever I'm sick. It's just whatever I feel like. I'm the same way with Blue. I don't like to think that much. So wandering around in an RPG, just kind of like, maybe I'm still like, is this fever dream happening in real life or am I doing this in the game? I don't know. I just play something that feels like I can focus on it for a little bit and my hands don't like drift off or they feel like they have weights on them. Just whatever. Maybe a platformer game? I don't know. But I don't have anything specific that I like to play when I'm sick.
Probably something you've played a gazillion times that you just have muscle memory for it.
Absolutely. Like Tetris or Super Mario World or something like that. Something I know and love. Definitely not a Metroidvania where I have to go back and go to this area and collect this power up, then go over to this area and then look at a map and go up here, carry the 5. No, not for me.
What about you, Ryan?
So I looked up on a few different lists as to what types of games to play when you're hungover, and Souls-likes kept coming up, and I thought that was the dumbest thing I've ever heard in my life. Like, who would punish themselves while you're not feeling good already? I don't know. But, I mean, I think our crowd agreed with that sentiment, so good on you guys. But I'm going to pick other, and I'm going to go with, you know, two of our respondents talked about beat-em-ups. I think beat-em-ups are a perfect type of game where it doesn't take a whole lot of thought and it's just button mashing and it's instant gratification. You punch somebody, you kick them, you throw them across the screen, whatever it is. It's instantly gratifying. And yeah, there's certainly like you got boss fights that are sometimes hard, but maybe just pick an easy beat 'em up for you. But it just doesn't create a situation where I feel like I'm mentally drained. I can kind of coast through it. And you know what? The beauty of it too is that a vast majority of beat 'em ups have like unlimited continues for the most part. So I can just waste away and then take a nap.
All right, now let's take a look at our patron shout outs.
We couldn't do what we do without the help of our gorgeous patrons. Here are the generous folks supporting Gamers Week on Patreon. And yes, we have a new patron to announce. A big thank you and welcome to Moradeeb. They'll be joining Michael LeKite, Emo-esque, Bill Tucker, The Real Retro Game Brews, Fruitcakes Pickled Pepper, Ducks with Thick Thighs, Wizard of Zardoz, Bobs and Dugnut, Loudmoth, Retro Blast Pat, Great Cyanman 81, B&T Zilla Guy, The Mad Milkman, Seven Castle Forest, Crunchy Kong, Sheriff Snacks, Frank Grande, Love Retro BTW, Steven Sand, Ramboski, Terry Kinnear, Doogie Forever, Ducks in Disguise, Don't Make Me Pull Over This Car, Games with Coffee, Hybrid Divide, Matto1606, You Fall Before Me, Davey PGH, The Red Ox PDX Family, including Shannon and Luke, Zach Huge Thanks, Number One Blues Sick Boys Fan, Sassy Sony, Evo Lust, Rai Rai Sigrid Best Friend, Mega Retro Man, and Gamatroid. If you like what you hear today, and we really hope you do, please consider joining us on Patreon. Your support helps cover the cost of producing the show, as well as other cool stuff we'll be doing, like prizes and giveaways. You'll also gain access to our weekly patron-only bonus cast called Gamers Week Uncut, Patrons with Benefits. Visit patreon.com/gamersweek or follow the link in the show notes to learn more.
And now let's take a look at the headlines for the week. Our headline segment is proudly sponsored by the Retro Game Club podcast. It's a fantastic family-friendly retro gaming podcast. In each episode, Rob and Hugh pick two games to play and discuss, as well as news, interviews, and other topics. Right now, they're playing through Final Fantasy and Super C. Visit them at retrogameclub.net or follow the link in the show notes.
I hope they're playing a more modern version of Final Fantasy. The NES version, if it's really frustrating. So one of the things they fixed in later versions of Final Fantasy was that if you mean to attack one character and another character takes them out, that doesn't forfeit your turn with that character. That's not prevalent in the first Final Fantasy, which sucks and it's annoying and I hate it. So I hope they're playing a more modern version because I think they've done like the, you know, kind of fixes to that whole situation because every Final Fantasy, I think since like the third one had that. So yeah, fingers crossed for everybody playing.
So that'll tackle just go to a dead body?
It doesn't, you completely forfeit that turn. So.
Oh crap. Okay. Yeah,
that character does nothing.
Knowing these guys, though, they're probably doing original hardware and all that kind of stuff, aren't they?
I would imagine, yeah. And then I wish you the best of luck.
Godspeed, sir. Godspeed.
All right, first up from GameSpot, a world's first 13-year-old kid beats Tetris. Tetris, one of the most popular and recognizable games of all time, has finally been beaten, in quotations. More than 30 years after the game's release, a 13-year-old Willis Gibson from Oklahoma. Gibson uploaded a video of his achievement to YouTube, and it's quite a sight to behold. He is demonstrably overwhelmed with excitement and astonishment. He claims, "Oh my God," before saying, "I can't feel my fingers," which I think every Tetris player knows that feeling. As you can see in the video, Willis reaches level 157. The video labels it as level 18, though. At this point, the game freezes. Willis reached the kill screen, which is the point at which Tetris is no longer playable because it was not designed to reach that level. Technically speaking, Tetris is unbeatable because it could theoretically go on forever, but Willis is believed to have set a world record. Tetris expert Vince Clemente told the New York Times that no human has ever gotten this far in Tetris before. Clemente said Willis did what was thought to be impossible.
People have used AI to test the limits of Tetris and have gone further, but Willis stands alone in his achievement as a human in the game of Tetris. His mother bought him a Retron console and a CRT TV, and Willis plays about 20 hours of Tetris per week. Willis is also a professional Tetris competitor and is one of the United States' most accomplished players. He placed third in the Classic Tetris World Championships in October in 2023, and he's gearing up for another event in Waco, Texas later this month. Willis has earned around $3,000 from competing in Tetris tournament so far, and Tetris was created by Alexey Pajitnov in 1985. Hank Rogers worked with Pajitnov to help promote and popularize the game with a wider audience, and thus they succeeded enormously. Tetris is the best-selling video game of all time and has been ported to pretty much every platform under the sun. So this is cool. I mean, Donnie, as the resident like Tetris expert, what are your thoughts on this?
I was thoroughly impressed. This kid was genuinely excited about what he did. I mean, and who wouldn't be? But the competitive Tetris landscape has changed by leaps and bounds in just over 5 years.
Right.
Rolling was not, nobody knew what rolling was before that. And all of you were either a Daz player or a Hyper Tapper. And I am a Daz player. I know Mega Retro Man is a Daz player. And all of a sudden I see this thing called rolling, and everybody is able to play level 19, no problem whatsoever. And I have not yet figured out how to do this, because you kind of have to invert the controller. So if I'm thinking this correctly, left is right, right is left, up is down, down is up. And I just, it's cracking my brain trying to say, okay, I this is how you have to play now. This is your life. You're inverted.
Because I was inverted.
Exactly. Because I wasn't.
Classified. And for people who don't know what DAS, hyper tapping, and rolling is, it's just a means to get the pieces over to where you want them as fast as possible. DAS is kind of the old way where you press as hard as you can right as the piece is coming out. So That's the way you play, Donnie. Hyper tapping was to tap the directional button as quickly as possible. So, like, you know, 16 button presses per second or something crazy like that. And right. Then rolling is where you're not necessarily tapping the D button. You actually have your finger on it and you're tapping the bottom of the controller to get it to
correct, move. Because that creates more pressure than just hyper tapping. So you see these people like kind of slapping the underneath of the controller, and you're like, what the hell are they doing? Well, they have two fingers pressed on either side, left or right, and wherever they want to go, obviously they press the left and then they tap underneath, and that shoots the piece all the way over to the left side or all the way over to the right side.
So perhaps for people who aren't super interested in the minutia of actually playing Tetris, like two nerds.
Okay.
What I want to know is, is the future going to be the kind of world where Willis can go ask somebody out on a date in a couple years and be like, yeah, I beat Tetris, no big deal. And have them actually be impressed.
I'm going to say with Gen Z, that's possible.
There's hope for the future. The right. Kids are all right.
Right. The kids are all right. In our generation, that's a no girlfriend move.
But ours, like, I can't go into a bar. If I were single, I can't go into a bar with like my members only jacket. Be like, hey, I just beat Tetris. So?
Just have to say, well, that means I have really fast fingers.
Yeah. You know, you do have a point.
I can put long pieces in wells that you wouldn't believe.
Fast fingers and a lot of focus. I don't quit till the job's done.
It's like, what are you? Is this a job interview?
Dates often are.
You're not wrong.
Is there any more sexual innuendos that we can make about Tetris?
I don't think so. Well, I mean, I'm sure there are, but we don't have that kind of time.
Maybe I'm about to T-spin you.
I think it's very cool that the games of our youth are still being played by people, by the new generation, and they're figuring out ways to actually absolutely destroy these games. Things that were never meant to happen or never meant to be achieved by the human hand is alive and well, and it's happening a lot during this particular generation.
Do you think it has to do with just maybe these kids are thinking outside the box more than we were?
Yes.
Maybe it might also, I don't know, maybe I'm speaking out of my ass, but don't you remember being 13 and just be like, you could learn anything and you could do just about anything?
You're no, like I a was stupid.
But I mean, when you're that age, you still have sponge brain. And I remember I was so much better at video games as far as like really super quick reaction time. So it kind of makes sense in a way that this feat would be accomplished by somebody in that age group.
I mean, you're not wrong. I feel like, however, I'm better at video games now, at least these types of video games, than I was whenever I was younger.
I would say that that's probably a result of the fact that you have the motivation to be better at these games, because back when you were a kid, unless somebody was around to see what you had done, you were just a story on the playground, let's be honest, right?
That's true. I mean, if Willis had done this 30 years ago, nobody would have known, nobody would have cared.
I disagree with you both on that one, simply because there were people who would write into magazines like GamePro and Electronic Gaming Monthly with their feats. Some people would send in video cassettes of what they've done, and that would get them published in these certain publications. And then everybody in the nation, or that everybody who would be able to subscribe or read a GamePro, Nintendo Power, Electronic Gaming Monthly, or what have you, would be able to see what this kid had did and then try to recreate it. And that would spread the word.
But how many of those were complete bullshit? Billy Mitchell, Todd Rogers, right? As an example. That guy that we posted recently a picture of, who was like a worker for Nintendo Power Hotline, who said he could beat Double Dragon in 15 minutes with a power glove. Like, come on. Right. There was a lot of BS back then.
Yeah. And who got a gaming magazine and flipped to the letters?
I mean, I like to read it for the articles from cover to cover. So,
right, of course. Yeah, because that's the first thing I did as a kid. Ooh, I want to check out the letters to the editor.
Kiss my ass.
All right, next up from PC Gamer, Square Enix's New Year's resolution is to become aggressive in applying AI, and I am very tired. After singeing its fingers on the hot stove of NFTs, Square Enix has decided to go in for another cheeky touch with AI, as stated by the company's new president, Takashi Kiryu, in a New Year's letter to his employees. "I believe that generative AI has the potential not only to reshape what we create, but also to fundamentally change the processes by which we create, including programming," writes Kiryu. He's not technically wrong. AI technologies could hypothetically aid artists, writers, and programmers, though often in understated and boring ways, a far cry from the revolutionary democratization of art its strongest advocates dream of. The only problem is, these are all uses for the tech that come from the people making the sausage, rather than the owners of the factory. Thinking about sausage factories. They're not some big revolutionary silver bullet that'll let companies make heaps of content for free. Kiryu continues, "We also intend to be aggressive in applying AI and other cutting-edge technologies to both our content development and our publishing functions. In the short term, our goal will be to enhance our development productivity and achieve greater sophistication in our marketing efforts. In the longer term, we hope to leverage those technologies to create new forms of content for consumers." That's the kind of framing that fills me with exhaustion. There's a repeated pattern I've seen among AI's biggest advocates. They'll get very excited about the new technology, make something that's over-reliant on it, and then be very confused when no one's amazed. Square Enix did this with NFTs. The company's arguably still doing it. Symbiogenesis is Square Enix's big NFT project, a game designed to leverage tech that's otherwise been bullied out of gaming, and it's not exactly doing great. Kiryu maintains that Web3 tech is still an area of focus. "In terms of new business domains, we previously identified three focused investment fields, namely blockchain entertainment / Web 3.0, AI, and the cloud." He goes on to say that Square Enix will modify our organizational structure and optimize our resource allocations to support these efforts. That is the most ominous and depressing lineup I think I've read in a long time. Blockchain, Web 3.0, AI, and the cloud.
It's either you can die a hero or live long enough to become the villain.
And we know which one Square Enix is becoming.
So we started off the show, the very first show, with NFTs. Mm-hmm. And we're still circling back with NFTs and seeing how big of a failure they were. And now Square Enix wants to go ahead and do more blockchain and AI.
It just feels like they're mailing this in. They don't want to actually produce games anymore. They just want the technology to do it for them. Like, just it's the round pole peel, set it and forget it crap. And from a company that has been failing left and right, knowing that the content that they are providing is just not living up to the expectations that it once had, why would you choose then to continue this slippery slope that they've been on of shying away from their bread and butter? I don't understand the logic behind Square Enix.
My theory was that somebody accidentally handed Kiryu the notes from last year's address. Because I swear we've done this before. I swear they've announced this before. But in Square Enix defense, yes, these things have been failing left and right and left and right. But to play just a squinge of devil's advocate, the first company to get it right and to be successful with it will just explode. So Square Enix wants so badly, like they're so in love with this technology and they want so badly to be the ones to make it work. But that's going to require a kind of like out of the box thinking that, at least in my opinion, we haven't seen from Square Enix in a long time. The company is being kept afloat by Final Fantasy XIV. And the biggest thing that people have to look forward to from it is continuation of the Final Fantasy VII remake.
And I was going to say just that, Blue. This is Square Enix's way of trying to be first. You said it right. The company that hits the home run the first time, they're going to be the ownership of it. They're going to set the trend. They're going to set things for the next couple of years. And all of these other companies are going to try and play catch up to not exactly do what they've done, but to try and build off of that so they don't get, copyright infringement or anything like that. But you've definitely made a great point. It's all about being first.
But the thing is, do you bet the farm on the entire organization by doing this? I mean, if you were a company that was massively successful now, then you have the opportunity to take these risks, because it doesn't mean that you're going to fall flat on your face and that Square Enix or your company will be no more. But when you've had failure after failure after failure, there's already this aura around your company that things aren't going well, or that the content that you're providing isn't great. So people are going to be naturally skeptical versus an organization that's been doing exceedingly well. So I just don't see the strategic value of trying to be first, knowing that the risks are so high for them at this moment.
But another failure for them is just normal.
Just business as usual over at Square Enix. Right.
You're not wrong. And in some ways, it feels like they're in too deep. And if they bail out now, if they give up on this stuff, what are they going to go back to?
They're pot committed, to make a poker reference.
Ah, there you go.
Because I mean, they did attempt, to give them a little bit of credit, with their last game, they did attempt to go back to their roots with Final Fantasy 16, but it was not well received and it didn't sell well. So either going back to their roots is no longer the answer because people aren't interested in their roots anymore, or they just didn't quite get back to their roots the way they thought they did.
I'm going to go with the latter, but I think that their next step is definitely to make a battle royale game out of Final Fantasy characters.
Didn't they do that?
Oh, maybe they did.
Wasn't it a mobile game?
Oh, if it was a mobile game, then I didn't hear about it.
hang on.
I mean, they already made a shooter with Dirge's Cerberus.
Yeah, okay. So the Final Fantasy VII battle royale, it was the first Soldier released for Android and iOS on November 17, 2021. And I remember this. We talked about it. You two had a bet about when it was going to shut down. And I think the bet was it was going to shut down in 1 year. It's all coming back to me now.
Well, yeah, like, what is this?
I barely remember if I wore underwear today, and you're pulling out stuff from like 3 or 4 years ago.
I mean, you could just call me a genius. That's okay.
She's a co-genius.
Oh, that was a throwback.
That was a low blow.
What? Next up from Games Radar, Super Mario Maker Miyamoto has no plans to retire from Nintendo. Shigeru Miyamoto supposedly has no plans to retire from Nintendo, though his role at the company has shifted dramatically. Miyamoto has worked at the company for over 45 years, creating several of the industry's most prominent mascots, such as Zelda and Mario, influencing every piece of Nintendo hardware from the NES to the Switch, and shaping video games as we know them today. But the world's most important game designer plans to stop working when he physically can't anymore. When asked about retirement plans, in an insightful interview with The Guardian, Miyamoto says, "More so than retiring, I'm thinking about the day I fall over." With his age in mind, Miyamoto says he plans his future in 5-year increments and thinks a lot about who can I pass things on to in case something does happen. Miyamoto's work has impacted generations of gamers and probably the entire globe based on the gamification of practically every single app, but he's not especially worried about his legacy. "I'm really thankful that there is so much energy around things that I have worked on," he says, before mentioning that the newest Super Mario and Zelda games have been largely built by newer, younger teams. Other people have been raising them, helping them grow, so in that sense, I don't feel too much ownership over them anymore. Miyamoto is seemingly only concerned about his legacy enduring with his teams, curiously pointing to a scene from Iron Man where the president is no longer allowed inside the company that he built, despite his portrait still hanging from the wall. "I really hope that the teams I work with at least remember me as the creator of these things." And what happens if that day comes and Miyamoto just like retires, tries to come back into the office, scans his card, denied. denied. Do you think Nintendo would do that to him?
I cannot comprehend a future where Miyamoto would not be welcome with open arms at Nintendo. Right. I mean, I don't know what goes on in the inner circle of Nintendo or how power hungry or backstabby the various people are, but come on, it's Miyamoto.
He is like the human embodiment of Nintendo.
Pretty much.
Right. They're going to upload his consciousness whenever they're able to do that.
Miyamoto Net.
Yeah, absolutely. It's going to be inside of Nintendo.
Miyamoto Net will lock Miyamoto out of Nintendo.
I can't do that, Shigeru. It will definitely be a sad day whenever Shigeru Miyamoto dies.
I mean, he's 71. I imagine he still has a lot of good years left in him.
You hope.
But it is nice. You know, he talks about the newer Mario and Zelda games being done by newer teams. So it's not like you have to fear that it won't be the same when he's gone. And a lot of things won't. But games like Mario Wonder and Breath of the Wild prove that these IP can go on and still live and grow and evolve, but still retain that special quality that makes them what we love, what we remember.
Right. It's he's not the only person that is able to come up with this kind of content.
Right.
Has he done so for a long time? Yes. But now that these other teams are working with him, it shows that these particular IPs can span generations without the original creator still having a piece on it.
Right. It's a little bit like you think about Studio Ghibli. Will it be the same when Miyazaki is gone? I kind of don't think so.
And we know that apparently Silent Hill is definitely not the same.
Without Team Silent, yeah.
Exactly. And then Metal Gear. What happens to, like, if they want to keep doing Metal Gear without Hideo Kojima?
They would lack his code genius.
You got that right.
Well, he's not involved in the new remake, so.
A lot easier to do a remake than a completely new IP.
Exactly.
Fair.
And it's nice to know that Miyamoto is still well-revered at the company, that he hasn't made any necessarily huge missteps that would create a negative impact of his legacy.
That we know of.
That we know of. Right, so.
Can you imagine the lengths they would go to bury Miyamoto's skeletons?
Oh, Jesus.
You have to keep the image of Saint Miyamoto alive. And the man very well may be just an absolute angel of a person. We don't know. We'd love to meet him and find out for ourselves, but I mean, come on. If he wasn't, no one would know.
Miyamoto is probably an honorary, like, high-ranking general in the Yakuza crime family. God.
Just, well, that's how Nintendo got their start, was selling Hanafuna cards to the Yakuza. So there's a connection there.
I wonder how horribly insulting it is that we just linked Miyamoto to the Yakuza.
Probably extremely.
Yes.
Damn it.
He's never going to listen.
Maybe you should just apologize just to be sure.
Yeah, Nintendo has ears everywhere.
Miyamoto-san, I apologize. It's like, that's not good enough. Give me your pinky. No!
Jesus Christ. Now, normally this is the part of the show where we talk about our top three new releases for the week, except for the third week in a row, there are no new releases. But stay tuned to Gamers Week because we'll be taking bets on whether or not Skull and Bones will actually release on February 16th after being delayed six times.
Here's my prediction. It releases, but it's a dumpster fire.
Ooh, don't say that.
If they could make it better, they would have by now, and they just got to get it out, and I think it's going to be a dumpster fire. There was already, you know, rumors of game testers just quitting because it was too boring.
Really? Uh-huh. I hadn't heard that.
I'm going to bet that it doesn't come out just so that you have somebody who is being a contrarian to you.
Well, we can always count on you for that.
You got it.
All right, let's go ahead and take a look at our main topic for the evening.
From gamesindustry.biz, analyst predictions for 2024. Every year, we turn to a panel of trusted analysts to ask them what they see coming down the road and ask them to assess their predictions from the previous year. First up is Dr. Sirkin Toto from Canton Games. Last year, Dr. Toto predicted that prices will continue to rise, which was right, and the recession will have little effect on gaming. And he says, I was referring to the demand and the market size, so I was right in this case. Newzoo actually sees a slight growth for the gaming industry in 2023. And thirdly, crypto will see actual games using top IP. Not really, but I believe this will come in 2024. And Dr. Toto's 2024 predictions, the Switch 2 will come out and be $400. The time is finally here for a Switch successor, even though I can say a Pro model actually did exist, and certain developers were already working with the dev kit. I believe the next hardware will drop next year for $400. There's a high chance that games will cost more too, $70. The next system is also likely to be an iteration rather than a revolution. Nintendo might add some bells and whistles to the device, but it will be similar to the current Switch. And because there is Pokemon, and Pokemon is associated with handheld gaming, there is no way on earth Nintendo will drop the portability feature for their next big thing.
Yeah, if Nintendo does that, they're going backwards, in my opinion.
Hopefully they don't call it the Switch U this time around.
Piers Harding Rolls and Peer Analysis from last year's predictions. Microsoft and Activision Blizzard to merge, but with further concessions. They were right. The completion of the deal will take place in the second half of 2023. Also right. The PS5 to be the best-selling games console. A third right. And no next-gen Nintendo console in 2023. Holy crap. 4-4-4 across the board.
Yeah, but Piers kind of did softball predictions.
Of course. It's like, water's going to be wet this year. Yep, I'm right.
It'll rain in Seattle.
Now, their 2024 predictions are Microsoft and Activision implications. Microsoft will challenge EA to become the biggest publisher across Xbox and PlayStation consoles in terms of player numbers. I'm expecting all future ActBlizz releases to go into Game Pass on day one. Did I say ActBlizz?
ActBlizz.
ActBlizz.
I want to use that from now on. ActBlizz.
I'm expecting all future ActBlizz releases to go into Game Pass on day one, unless there is an existing contract that does not allow that. Game Pass will also be the only multi-game subscription service with day one inclusion of stream versions of these new releases. I think it is cost prohibitive for other services. 2024 will see an expansion of the Game Pass offering, more mobile content, a lower cost tier, potentially with ads, and the PC version offered in more markets.
ActBlizz sounds to me like an edgy chapstick brand.
Or something that you're supposed to put on cold sores.
Stab those cold sores right away with ActBlizz. And I can see the infomercial with the lightning strike. ActBlizz was gone.
Yep, exactly.
Isn't that a Mitch Hedberg joke? He's like, CarMax will, I don't know if they'll take care of cold sores, but they'll certainly make them look shinier. All right, Carol Severin and Perry Gresham of Media Research. Last year's predictions were value will be king, right? I wrote in 2023, games companies will thus have to navigate the tall order of increasing value for money while keeping entry costs flat or ideally lower. Traditional unit sales dependent business models will struggle in the macroeconomic weather. And Xbox will narrow PlayStation's lead in terms of console ownership. Wrong. Sony significantly outsold Xbox this year, having proven more resilient in the current competitive landscape than previously expected. However, it is worth noting that Xbox strategy going forward does not necessarily hinge on the number of consoles sold, but rather on the number of subscriptions. Their 2024 predictions are AI to supercharge games development. AI stands to remove or at least lessen one of the great barriers of game development, the requirement to code. Meanwhile, advances in game engines like Unreal Engine are also lowering barriers to entry. Next prediction, another 100 million plus acquisition will take place. Broader consolidation trend in the games landscape will continue in 2024 as games companies keep shifting focus towards profitability, time spent, and money earned per hour played. Besides further cost cutting through tactics such as layoffs, expect more acquisitions of game companies. Potential buyers include large existing game companies, example Sony, NetEase, Nintendo, Valve, Epic, EA, and Take-Two Interactive, as well as non-gaming companies expanding further into the space, i.e. Apple, Netflix, Disney, TikTok, Meta, and Amazon.
So what do you guys think? Last year, the predictions were all just basically about how everything was getting more expensive and it was depressing. This year, we've got some interesting stuff.
I think we all know our opinions on the fact that AI will become supercharged in games development. Not a huge fan, but I sadly think they're right. This is becoming a utilization of a technology that is going to prove to be less costly for them, and they have the ability to pump out more and more content as a result of that. Whether that content is quality or not, that I don't know yet, but it certainly seems to be leaning that way.
So supposedly we'll get Switch 2. I mean, Dr. Cirque and Toto is the one who predicted Mario Kart 9, I think, 2 years ago.
And that still hasn't happened.
So, not saying Dr. Toto doesn't have a great track record, but do you really think we'll get Switch 2?
Well, yeah, they did announce that the Switch 2 was coming in 2024, didn't they?
Well, that was a rumor.
Yeah, that was Bobby Kotick saying that he had like some inside information.
And he's no longer employed.
No, he's sipping daiquiris on a nice beach somewhere far from here.
Yep.
I wonder, because the Switch has sold like almost 140 million units. So is that to the point in which they have saturated the market enough with those consoles that they don't expect to see that trend continue? Then yes, it would make sense to start looking at producing a Switch too. I'm sure they have it.
Yeah.
They've produced and they've got dev kits out there if it is truly the case. And the fact that they never came out with a pro tech,
the OLED?
Yeah. Is that a pro though?
I mean, probably from their
perspective.
Yeah. They improved what they thought was important.
Yeah. So a shinier screen and some other stuff.
Yeah. For that mobile, all important mobile market over in Japan.
Right. So what happens with the Switch 2 if it's not a revolution, if it's just bells and whistles? Can they justify a $400 price point on a bell and whistle upgrade?
Well, now this time it'll have the processing power of PS4.
Ooh, yeah. They're catching up.
Yeah, always a generation behind.
But, okay, you come out with the Switch 2, it's not revolutionary. It just has bells and whistles. Is it a must that they keep the portability?
I think because it's so popular right now, yes. Because it plays to both gamers, right? People who are on the go, as well as the fact that it connects to your TV. I never move mine off the dock. It's always there. But there are plenty of people. I mean, look how well the Switch Lite did, right? Mm-hmm. And that's, you can't connect that to your TV. So clearly there's still a market for that. And really for them, it actually creates an easier situation because they don't have to run two different consoles at once. They don't have to run the 3DS as well as their console. They can only focus on one thing and produce games just for that thing. That is such an easier business model for them. So I think, yes, they stick with the portability. The only thing is, maybe this is like the Star Trek films, right? Where like the odd ones suck and the even ones are great, right? So like the Wii was great for sales. The Wii U wasn't, right? And the Switch was great for sales. And maybe the Switch U or Switch 2 won't be. And Nintendo will be just fine.
I can't believe you said that about the Star Trek
movies. No, ask any Trekkie.
That's got me thinking.
Ask any Trekkie, and they will tell you that that's the case.
But I think, you know, it depends on a couple of things. Are the supply chains ironed out to where Nintendo feels comfortable being able to get these out to market?
That's a good point.
And how much cross-compatibility, I guess, is there going to be between the Switch and the Switch 2? So is it going to be a kind of a thing where families can get a Switch 2 and play all their Switch 1 games on it?
No, they'll just do everything like they did with the Wii U and just port them over, so you got to buy the game again.
Which is another possibility.
I get why they did it with the Wii U, because nobody bought one.
Right, exactly. So, but I mean, you do ask a good question. If it's just an iteration with a few more bells and whistles, why would the average family need it? And I'm sure Nintendo has an answer. They usually do for these kinds of things. But I'm just curious what it will be.
I mean, they have to increase the storage space, for one, which is super annoying on the Switch. So yeah, the internal storage space.
Little SD cards.
Yeah, but that's an additional peripheral that you have to purchase in order to make that a possibility. And the second piece to it is increasing the processing power on this thing.
Yeah.
Or they roll out cloud storage.
That's a possibility as well, right? That they mm-hmm. start relying more on cloud storage. That would actually make a lot of sense. The only thing is, last I heard, their online service for a lot of their games are still running on like a Windows 98 server.
Keep it real, baby.
Yeah, so they'll have to kind of up their game on that one. But yeah, other than that, I mean, the thing is, though, Nintendo creates games that don't necessarily need a lot of processing power. The only time that it's ever really noticeable is when they port games over and it's just so horribly bad. Like, what was it? Mortal Kombat 1 that just was grotesque on the Switch?
I think mm-hmm. your point is well made, is if Nintendo wants to have a console that AAA games continue to port over to, that it would be nice if they could actually run on the damn thing.
Absolutely.
And I mean, they don't have to go as far as Xbox and Sony do, right? They've mm-hmm. never been the company that needs to be at the forefront of technology, but maybe just a little better than a PS4 would help them a lot. The only problem that you run into is that if you look at the size of a PS5, if you wanted to take the technology from a PS5 and put that in a handheld portable console, it'd be like carrying around like a monitor, you know, from your computer. Like, hey guys, this is great.
Sony's made a portable PS5. Remember?
That's true. The portal, right? But isn't it all based off of cloud gaming, right?
So you can't go anywhere with it.
Right. So are they going to have to sell like a box that has all the processing power and then converts it over to that? That would be stupid. That would totally go against their current model. So I don't know. But then again, technology is always advancing. So maybe they've tapped into quantum computing and the Switch will cost, each one will be $10,000.
Ooh.
Hashtag worth it to play Mario Kart 9.
No, if I'm spending $10,000, it's not going to be on a Switch. It's not going to be on a Nintendo console.
What would it be on?
It would be on, this isn't the uncut, so I'll have to give a generic answer. If I were spending $10,000, it would be on a super high-end rig with maybe some haptic VR feedback suits. Mm.
And but don't you get nauseous in VR?
I do, only with certain things, especially like a game that you have to run in, which I did pick up a new game this evening that's a VR game. It's a VR survival horror thing. So we'll see how quickly I throw up on that one.
Please play that on Monday, please.
So for Gamers Week 2023 predictions, Donnie said Nintendo will not create a new piece of hardware and they'll move to cloud-based gaming. Donnie, how do you feel you did?
More like 50-50?
Yeah, I'd say 50-50.
Fair enough. So my prediction was that Starfield was going to be a game of the year. We all know how that went.
No, tell us. Tell us.
I can hear that video clip of the guy on the game show, the Spanish guy, with his laughter, the guy with the missing teeth.
Eso.
Man, after all the hype of that game, it was going to save Microsoft's decade. It was the next big Bethesda thing. And it's just kind of been humdrum reaction. And it didn't even get nominated for Game of the Year. I was set up by the marketing hype.
That's a shame.
The marketing hype and the hopes and dreams of all the fans. And then Ryan predicted the Microsoft Blizzard acquisition will not go through.
I would like to point out that I said I wanted it to go through. I just didn't think it was going to.
No, I just listened to it before this. You didn't say that.
She got the receipt.
Damn it! My attempt to save my ass.
She opened up the 2023 Trapper Keeper and pulled out the folder. It was like, nope, nope, here you go. See, this is the receipt.
Yep, the Lisa Frank Trapper Keeper, where I keep all my receipts.
It feels like that commercial where they're like, let's do the replay.
Yeah. We don't need to see the replay. We don't need to watch it. Oh, we're going to watch it.
All right, guys. Let's make our 2024 predictions.
Okay, 2024 predictions. I don't want something that's easy, so I don't want to say, oh, Switch 2 is coming up. Don't want that. I think it's way too easy. I'm going to say that Elon Musk gets into the gaming space in some way.
In some way. Because right. They already attempted streaming, so you...
I think they're going to give it another go.
Okay.
Whether that's purchasing a company that does that, whether it's through Twitter X... Or he starts running a Twitch account on the SpaceX rocket. I think Elon Musk will get involved with gaming.
I think that Square Enix will be bought by another company.
Whoa.
I would say for our purposes, you have to tell us which company.
Square Enix will be purchased by Sony.
Okay.
I mean, I think it's a bold enough choice just to say they'll be purchased.
I know. I was just trying to push it further so that next year when it's Xbox.
You're like, aha, you were wrong, you dumbass. It's like, geez, okay.
Just hedging my bets.
With all the mergers and buyouts and all this stuff and acquisitions, there's going to be another company that says, hey, we can make Square Enix the powerhouse it used to be. And they're like, okay, you know what? We're tired of this. Let's go ahead and do it. Let's hand the reins over to these people. Let's take our money. Let's go relax. And let's go join Bobby Kotick on the beach and sip a pina colada.
Okay. The last 2 years I've predicted or tried to predict what the game of the year will be. In 2022, it was pretty easy because it was either going to be Elden Ring or God of War. Like, those were the two big titles that year. Last year was more challenging because there were several titles, big titles, going to release during the year. Like, we talked about Starfield, of course. We talked about Spider-Man. We talked about Final Fantasy 16 and Tears of the Kingdom. And so it was a little more difficult to choose. This year, looking ahead to the big games releasing in 2024... like, there's freaking nothing. There's a lot of, like, mid-sized games. There's Prince of Persia. There's Dragon's Dogma 2. There's Hellblade 2. There's Hades 2, which I'm really looking forward to. But those are not really the kind of games that you'd be like, oh, yeah, that's going to be Game of the Year. There's more niche stuff. There's, like, Tekken 8, Like a Dragon, Infinite Wealth. There's Persona 3 Reload. There's Suicide Squad, there's Rise of the Ronin, there's Black Myth Wukong, but there's just really nothing. There's not that one game that stands out and says, this is going to be the game that's going to be Game of the Year.
So either you're a coward and you choose not to pick what your Game of the Year is going to be, or you grow a pair and pick one.
Do I strike you as a coward, Ryan?
But choose wisely.
I am.
So here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to pick Game of the Year for 2024, and I'm going to say Star Wars Outlaws.
Okay.
Now, there's still a really great chance because Ubisoft kind of gave a fuzzy release window of late 2024, so there's still a really great chance that it gets pushed to 2025. So that's a possibility. But if it comes out, this is a formula that Ubisoft knows how to do well and knows how to make successful, is this kind of open world action RPG. Star Wars Outlaws is just going to be Assassin's Creed in a Star Wars suit. That wouldn't normally be the kind of thing that I'd say, yeah, that'll be Game of the Year. But there's not a lot else up against it. So Star Wars Outlaws for Game of the Year 2024. You heard it here first, folks.
Kind of disappointed you didn't go for the risky route and pick Skull and Bones.
I'm not a coward, but I'm not foolhardy.
Touche.
Or isn't there a Garfield game coming out this year? Why not pick that one?
You're right. Some people just want to see the world born. Garfield for Goaty 2024.
All right, before we move on, let's take a quick break to talk about our sponsor. This segment is proudly sponsored by A Gamer Looks at 40 podcast. The show explores the history of video games through the stories and experiences of the everyday people who lived it. The podcast is currently on hiatus, but there are over 90 episodes in the backlog ready to be explored. This week's question is, what's one game from your backlog you want to finish this year? Let Bill know your answer by sending him a tweet at A Gamer Looks at 40 on Twitter. Ryan? What's in your backlog that you want to finish?
I'm going to finish Bloodborne this year.
Ooh, that's right.
So now you're not just going to play 15 hours and see how you like it. You're going to finish Bloodborne.
I am optimistic. This is not a blood contract. Thank you very much.
Okay, we'll check in with you and see how that's going.
Mm-hmm. Blue, what about you? What's your game in the backlog that you want to pick?
I would like to finish Lies of P. That's a game that I was looking forward to for a long time. I got it at release. I played just a little bit and loved what I played. And then I don't remember what happened. Stuff happened. And I didn't go back to it after that first initial little bit that I played. But I've heard nothing but good things about it. And there's all kinds of sequel rumors on the horizon. So if I don't catch up on it, I'm going to get even more behind. So Lies of P. I've got to finish Lies of P this year.
Very nice.
What about you?
I have several games in the backlog that I plan on finishing. One is Spider-Man for the PS4. I get started in the game, and then I kind of go back up to the PC, which is upstairs on the top of my kingdom. The PS4 is downstairs with the peasants in the basement. And it's just, I don't like being away from my computer for that long. So it's like, it's kind of hard for me to get back into playing it. But there's also that. And I did add to my backlog today by purchasing the Outlast Trials. That's a game that we talked about a couple weeks ago that just came out. And it's in early access. And I'm going to be playing that one as well.
I can't wait to watch you stream that.
I'm already scared.
The screaming memes. The screaming memes.
They will be plentiful.
Thank you for coming, students. Please take your seats. Welcome back to Professor Rybrand's Nostalgia 101. And in today's lesson, we'll be discussing the heartbreak and the desire I had growing up for the multitude of toys I always wanted but never got. I may or may not have had multiple discussions with my therapist. Now, misery loves company, and I'm sure many of you can relate. So let's start off with number one. It is Tyco's Dino Riders. Now, for those who are unfamiliar with the late 80s, there was a short run of cartoon show called Dino Riders. The premise of the show was that two ships were chasing each other through space, were caught in some time warp, and brought them back to the Cretaceous period of Earth. Dino Riders were the good guys, and the Rulons, who were anthropomorphic lizards, bugs, and other creatures, were the bad guys. And they decided to use their advanced technology to continue the fight and either enslave, in the case of the Rulons, or partner, in the case of the Dino Riders, with the dinosaurs. Now, Rulons preferred carnivores, Dino Riders preferred the herbivores, strap on a control device to their brains, fit them with armor and lasers, and bam, you got a hell of a show. Well, the show was okay. But the toys were epic. T-Rex, Stegosaurus, Brontosaurus, and more that you could put on epic battles in your living room. And they were big figurines. So therefore, they were expensive, and young Ryan never got his hands on them. Number two, the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles blimp. Now, I doubt I need to explain the turtles to anyone in this audience, considering that they are still a thing even to this day. However, back in the early 1990s, Kroner was making the Turtles action figures, and they looked great. Sure, I had the Turtles action figures themselves, but not the blimp. Anyone who watched this show back then was familiar with the Turtle Blimp. It was an epic vehicle used by the Turtles to fight evil Shredder and his henchmen, and the blimp had dual functions in the show and would detach from the inflatable part to make a glider. Well, the toy by Kroner did the same thing and even included some awesome bombs that you could drop in the bad guys. While I think the turtle fan was far more iconic in most people's minds, the blimp was the toy I wanted and never got. And number three is the Super Turbo Train by Tyco. I believe I first became aware of the train while watching a Dino Riders VHS, ironically enough, and they included pre-roll commercials to convince kids to buy their shit, and boy, did it work for me. This was a remote-controlled train that boasted that it was the world's fastest toy train.
Lots of competition in that realm.
Now, what made it so epic is that the track not only included a loop, but a section that would attach to the wall so the train would loop up on the wall itself. And not to mention, if you turned out the lights, it glowed in the dark. Now, I wasn't really into trains myself, but the commercial made it seem so epic. The announcer was super exciting, and the music matched the action, and the tagline, "New from Tyco, of course," had me hooked. Now, watching again as an adult, it still worked on me. Damn you, Tyco, you were good. Number 4, Crocodile Mile. Now, water toys were all the rage in the 80s and 90s. Hook a hose to something, and bam! You have your own water park in your backyard. Now, Crocodile Mile was a derivative of the slip and slide. Basically, a toy that you would cover in water while getting a running start and slide along with what seemed like zero friction. Now, Crocodile Mile had this cool curtain with a cartoon crocodile on it, and it was hiding a splashdown pool behind it that you would be launched into after hitting a small bump. Now, I wanted one badly, but my parents were into that whole safety thing or something. As they heard, that kids were sustaining head and neck injuries using this or similar slip and slide toys. I didn't care. I wanted the slide across my lawn and the wind whipping through my hair, only to splash down in a tiny pool of water that would likely fill up with dirt and grass after only one use.
But it didn't on the commercials.
Never. It was perfect. Crystal clear water every time. Now, number 5 is Dr. Dreadful Food Lab. Now, gross out stuff was a popular genre of toys for boys back then, from creepy crawlers to monster face toys. They knew exactly what they were doing as boys like myself ate them up. Now, girls had the toy that would allow you to make food and eat in your own house, aka the Easy Bake Oven. And Dr. Dreadful's Food Lab was the gross out answer to that. It was basically a way to make gummies in the shape of gross bugs, a sugar laden drink that was red, and monster skin made out of some kind of sugar as well. Fun fact, as a kid, I wasn't allowed to have sugary cereal because my parents thought it made me hyper. So there was no way that they were going to let me make my own sugar-loaded food at home. I'm sure my dentist was disappointed. And finally, number 6. This may come as a surprise. Electronic Dream Phone.
What?
Yes. I wanted a girl's toy. But it seemed like a fun game to play. The premise was that you were following clues to find out which guy in town you liked you. But really, it was actually, hear me out. Yeah.
That's a problem Ryan has to this day.
I need to find out. You know what? When I see those ads that say hot MILFs in town that will like you, I wonder if it's just a bird. Right. I'll type it in. All right, but really, it was actually kind of a cool mystery game that requires you to use your wits to uncover the clues and find out the true identity of your stalker. Now, of course, I never told my parents or friends that I wanted this because I didn't want to have to face the stigma of wanting something for girls. But as an adult, I can admit, despite the shallow premise, there's actually a pretty fun game to be had. So if anyone want to pick one up and play with me someday, I'd be happy to find out, as the commercial says, if Dan is my man.
I will buy this and we will play it together.
Oh my gosh. I wonder what the replayability is on that thing. Like, is it a different stalker every time? Or once you know the answer? Yes.
Wait, it's a different stalker every time. And there's a list of like 50 guys you could choose
from. Oh, really? Yeah. So it's not like the Guess Who game where once you know what 3 or 4 questions to ask, then you get it.
Correct. And then you have to type into the phone, and you can either choose to keep it a secret or let others hear.
Oh.
Yeah. And it'll say things like, I'm not wearing a jacket, or I like hanging out at the beach. And then you look at your category card, right? And it's like, oh, doesn't wear jackets. Cross that out. All right. Doesn't like to go to the beach. Oh, we can cross these guys out.
So apparently right now, the Electronic Dream Phone board game, there's one on eBay for $125 or best offer.
The ironic part, too, is that Cinemassacre has actually done an episode on the Dream Phone, and they turned it into a horror episode, and it's epic.
I missed that one. I'll have to go look it up.
Yeah, it's from Board James, which is their board game division of Cinemassacre.
Oh, no wonder I didn't watch it.
You should also watch the Mr. Bucket one. That one's pretty funny. And it's also a horror one. So it's about Mr. Bucket putting balls in his mouth.
Yeah. Hi-oh.
It's exactly what you think it is.
Yep. All right.
All right. So to wrap things up, do you have any toys that you wanted but never got as a kid? Let me know by tagging at GamersWeekPC on Twitter and letting me know which toys you missed out on and if you have since redeemed that or remedied that from your FOMO. Now, thank you for attending today's Nostalgia 101. Just a reminder, if you have any ideas for a story or a topic you'd like to hear, send us a message at gamersweekpodcast@gmail.com and we might feature your suggestion.
Three toys come to mind.
Okay.
Wanted a Cabbage Patch Kid. Never got one.
Ooh, okay. Okay.
Wanted the My Little Pony Castle. Never got it.
That's a big one too, isn't it?
It's yeah. Pretty, well, yeah. It seemed huge back then. Who even knows?
It's the girl's version of the USS flag.
Probably. And then, oh God, I would have died for a power wheel.
Ooh.
Pow, pow, power wheels.
Yes.
Donnie, did you have any that came to mind right away?
Yes. You said it, the USS flag.
Of course.
And as I stated in our earlier episode a couple weeks ago, that this was the, I think the 35th anniversary or the 40th anniversary of me not receiving the USS flag for Christmas. There's that one. There's the Mad Scientist Monster Lab with Dissect an Alien.
Oh.
If you remember that one.
I do. Uh-huh. Yes.
I absolutely coveted that toy. And I never got that. I always found like the Mad Scientist Labs to be fun and the commercials where it was zany and wacky. And I really wanted to stick my hands in the goop and pull out his guts and all that stuff.
That's how Jeffrey Dahmer got into that.
He started with Dissect an Alien. Mom, you got me dissect a human instead.
Or he's like, I want the Dissect an Alien lab. Nah, we got that at home.
And the third one was Eternia, the Eternia playset from Masters of the Universe, which was so like back then it was very rare. There was one kid in my neighborhood who had it and I would constantly I didn't really care for the kid. He was, you know, just not even going to say it over at his house playing constantly with Eternia and getting my hands on that. And now that playset goes for thousands of dollars and they just crowdfunded a newer Eternia playset that was going to be like $700 for you to buy and get in on. I was like, nope.
Have you tracked this person down on Facebook to find out if they still have it?
And hopefully they're not a listener.
You're saying you creep into their house?
I doubt this person still has it, but if they did, I wouldn't be above doing some nefarious things. Get my hand on Eternia playset.
Do you want me to cut that part out?
Roll the dice.
Leave it in so that the authorities know what to do.
Hey, when they're investigating Donnie's crimes, at least we'll get a lot of downloads.
We got to forward this on to the FBI.
Yeah, we could be on a true crime podcast featured, right? Oh my God, so many downloads.
All right, thank you for listening to episode 104 of Gamers Week Podcast, and a big thank you to the Retro Game Club Podcast, Love Retro BTW, and A Gamer Looks at 40 Podcast for sponsoring this episode. Don't forget to check out their links in the show notes. And remember to join us for our two-year anniversary live Twitch stream on Monday, January 8th at 6:30 Pacific Time, 9:30 Eastern, on twitch.tv/GamersWeekPodcast. We hope to see you there. If you want to connect with Gamers Week, follow us on Twitter at GamersWeekPC. Email us at gamersweekpodcast@gmail.com. Visit our merch store at gamers-week-podcast.creator-spring.com. Or if you want to do it the easy way, follow the link in the show notes. And join us on Patreon at patreon.com/gamersweek. And finally, since you made it all the way to the end of this episode, please leave us a rating and a review to let us know how we did. We really do value your feedback. And while you're there, consider subscribing on iTunes, Spotify, or your podcast platform of choice.
Happy two-year anniversary, you guys.
Yeah, happy 2 years. Yeah. I am glad to say that we're still doing this. This is pretty awesome.
The future looked so bright whenever we first started in our very first episode. We were all like, man, can you imagine if we're still doing this in 2 years? And here we are. We're still doing it. Kill me.
If I agree to this, are you going to keep it in so that that ends up as part of the FBI investigation? He asked me to do it.
Right. Good night, everybody.
Yeah, good night.
Donnie's cold dead hands. Good night.
Liquid!
Welcome to Gamers Week Uncut.
Welcome to Gamers Week Uncut.
Welcome to Gamers Week Uncut, patrons with benefits. This is the unscripted, patron-only bonus cast with less editing and more dirty jokes. We don't know where the conversation will go, but we're sure it will be weird.
This fish just went right on my nipple, and I'm just like...
I Google Street Fighter 6. The first search result that comes up is people think they can see Ryu's dick in the Street Fighter 6 reveal.
Listen up here, kids. You're not going to want to get one of those VDSTDs things, right? Make your dick fall off. When you go, grab a pro. You'll be doing it for America.
That was perfect.
If you want to hear weekly episodes of our patron-only bonus cast, join us at patreon.com/gamersweek.